And you are listening. You're listening to 90.7. WGXC Acra. Catskills. Today, East Durham. Catskills.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. And add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and happy new year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Brendan Donegan in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Hundreds of students, parents, and community members rallied on March 3rd and March 4th in support of a suspended teacher and principal at Catskill High School. Some students began the protest on March 1st, walking out of classes because they wanted Principal Junot Shah and chorus teacher and musical director Michelle Storrs Ryan to be reinstated. To many in the community, the issue is baffling. Last month, Storrs Ryan teased students that if they did not get quiet, she was going to get out some tape. Then a student, as a joke, put tape on her mouth for about 30 seconds. A student later complained to Shah about the incident, who saw no reason to take action. But word of the incident got out to those above Shah, and the teacher and principal were suspended. Sarah Pickens Burden, president of Catskill Music Parent Student Association, told Porcupine Soup that Shah and Storrs have also been asked to resign. Superintendent Dr. Dan Wilson would only say that, and I quote, any personal matters are confidential, therefore the district is not at liberty to discuss the specifics of the investigation, end quote. On March 3rd, hundreds of community members marched from the Greene County Office Building in Catskill to the school, fully covering the sidewalk of the Uncle Sam Bridge along the way. They surrounded the superintendent's office, holding hands and chanting.
Let's surround the building. I'm going to walk around with a video and show everyone around the building.
On March 4th, more community members turned out as the school day began at 7 a.m., and many students remained on the lawn in front of the school for several hours, defiantly not attending class in support of their teacher and principal. Wilson attempted to address the crowd there before the school day began.
Our focus still remains.
Go back to where you came from. You're a liar. You're a liar.
In our school district.
And you know it. You're a liar.
You're a liar.
Go back to where you came from.
Mid-Hudson News reports that new congressional maps approved by the governor and the state legislature last week should help Democrats in the 18th and 19th congressional districts locally. Democrat Pat Ryan of Gardiner is the incumbent in the 18th district, who lost some of his Ulster County territory to the 19th district, but now finds his map slightly more Democratic. Ryan is facing Republican Allison Esposito, a former NYPD captain and the lieutenant governor candidate in 2022. The Cook Political Report rates the district as, and I quote, lean Democratic, end quote. In the 19th Congressional District, Republican Mark Molinaro of Leeds also sees a new district that has slightly more Democrats. Josh Riley, who lost to Molinaro by 1.6% in 2022, is trying to beat him again. The Cook Political Report rates the race as a, and I quote, toss-up, end quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
As the impacts of climate change grow, New Yorkers and people across the country are grieving for the environment. Ecological grief, also known as solastalgia, has become an increasing response to climate change. A 2020 American Psychological Association survey finds almost 70% of people feel climate change is impacting their mental health. The Reverend Chelsea McMillan is with Green Faith, a multi-faith climate action organization, which hosts grief circles for people to commiserate about climate change.
People are grieving the decline of bird populations, longhorn sheep that are dying in the Sierra Nevadas due to extreme weather conditions. There was heavy snowfall this past year.
McMillan adds people are also grieving shorter and warmer winters. She sees a growing sense of hopelessness in these circles in response to a lack of political will. Countries worldwide are moving to a climate-friendly future, but it's uncertain how effective these efforts are. A 2022 United Nations report finds global greenhouse gas emissions are declining. However, it's not fast enough to limit global temperature increases to 1.5 degrees by the end of the century. While the grief circles concentrate on environmental issues, they sometimes open up to ongoing current events. McMillan says people are distressed by the growing sense of apathy about the world. She notes this distress has led some people to question their faith.
I think they see a lot of clergy and faith leaders not responding to these crises and instead focusing on the afterlife or focusing on their homogenous communities and how do we protect our homogenous communities from these perceived threats in the world.
McMillan feels times of crisis can strengthen a person's faith. She thinks faith isn't just waiting for God or some higher power to save the day. Rather, it's about being an active participant in heeding the cries of the world. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, March 5th. Local early morning temperatures range from 37 degrees in Tannersville to 45 in Kinderhook and Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 41. We are looking at an inch of rain falling across the area today. Approaching from the south, it will strike southern towns like Copaic and Saugerties first. The rain will really get going by 9 a.m. We get a high of 47 at 3 p.m. Overnight, we get a low of 43, and rain comes to an end by midnight. Isn't that nice? Well, it's back on by the morning. Wednesday will also be rainy, especially in the afternoon, and we get a high of 57. Rain continues all night as temperatures fall to 42. Thursday, rainy and gusty with a high of 46. Friday will be relatively nice and it will be a good time for those maple tappers to run around and check those buckets. We get a high of 52 and the weekend is looking wet again. Sunset today will be at 5:36 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be slow at 381 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently still kind of bad till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 113, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
Next, here's the Hudson-based band Buke and Gase. From their 2022 album, Buke and Gase and Ra Ra Gabor, this is the song Ponds. You are currently stepping lively with Columbia County drummer, percussionist, composer Bobby Previtt, playing along with Jamie Saft and Steve Swallow on Step Lively. Thank you.
Columbia County's Bobby Previtt on drums there with Steve Swallow and Jamie Saff. That was Step Lively on WGXC 90.7 FM, Creative Community Solar Powered Radio.
Breaking lights and the sky is light and hazy. Has anyone ever told you that you are fucking crazy? You had some broken bottles become oysters of three bottles. Serious and broken rotten, we come as of springs in water. The sky's dividing into strands of blue and golden river. I think that I'll go home tonight and drink away my liver. Where the devil trod and waddles, we go until we hit rock bottom. Serious and broken rotten.
That was Morning Sun, or Jess Kath from Catskill, with the song Not Weed.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a unanimous decision March 4th, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the decision of the Colorado Supreme Court to remove Donald Trump from the Colorado state ballot, ending state efforts to enforce the 14th Amendment, Section 3. The court punted to Congress to enforce the 14th Amendment, saying, quote, "The Constitution empowers Congress to prescribe how those determinations should be made. The relevant provision is Section 5, which enables Congress, subject to judicial review, to pass appropriate legislation to enforce the 14th Amendment." The court majority also noted that the states did in fact use the 14th Amendment to disqualify state candidates, but that, quote, "such power over governance, however, does not extend to federal office holders and candidates." Both the decision and a concurrence by Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson expressed concern that if the states had the power, it would result in a patchwork of decisions which could affect the outcome of the election. But the concurrence raised alarms that the conservative majority overreached. Quote, "Although we agree that Colorado cannot enforce Section 3, we protest the majority's effort to use this case to define the limits of federal enforcement of that provision. It's unlikely Congress would agree on any legislation to disqualify former President Donald Trump." We have a link to the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
On January 6th, if Donald Trump wins, I think we can absolutely expect that there will be members of Congress who will object to electoral votes he's won perhaps in many, many states, on the basis that he's not a qualified candidate.
David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says the Supreme Court has ruled unanimously that no single state can disqualify former President Trump for his role in the January 6th insurrection. But Becker says the ruling is not an exoneration on the substance, and people in Congress could still challenge Trump's right to take office under the 14th Amendment. Trump posted a rambling speech on Truth Social that thanked the court, but then veered into tangled comments on a separate legal issue now also before the SCOTUS, his claim that a president has unlimited immunity from criminal prosecution.
Nobody that is serving in that office will have the courage to make, in many cases, what would be the right decision, or it could be the wrong decision. It could be, in some cases, the wrong decision, but they have to make decisions, and they have to make them free of all terror that can be rained upon them when they leave office or even before they leave office.
Meanwhile, the former chief financial officer of Trump's real estate company pleaded guilty to two counts of perjury Monday. Today is Super Tuesday. Primaries or caucuses in 16 states. Sylvia Albert with Common Cause says voters need to be aware because state election laws are constantly changing.
Some of them have passed great new laws that expand access to the ballot, like Minnesota and Massachusetts, Colorado. But then you also have states that have passed laws that limit access to the ballot, like North Carolina, that eliminated the three-day grace period.
Mail-in ballots in North Carolina will no longer count if received within 3 days after the election. Jack Teixeira has accepted 16 years in prison under a plea deal. The Air National Guardsman used top-secret clearance to access classified intelligence so he could impress people in an online chat group. Jason Casey is an assistant United States attorney in Massachusetts.
To put it in context, this airman was the IT guy. He had no business being in areas where super sensitive kinds of intelligence were being disseminated.
A Colorado court has sentenced a paramedic to 5 years for giving Elijah McClain a fatal dose of ketamine. The black pedestrian died after a 2019 confrontation with police. Shanine McClain, Elijah's mother, says it's been hard to wait so long and not see systemic change.
Unfortunately, this is it, right? I don't see no hope. I don't see no change. A little bit of law here, a little bit of law there. Nothing stops their hatred. Nothing stops their racism. And nothing stops their evil protocols.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Fox and I have the role in TV 303. I should think it will be easy miming on top of the pops. Fox and I, liberated from emotions, exploring other oceans. What use have we for hell? Anyone can change into a machine. Girl or white, black or boy, it's all very strange into a machine. Come with me. Fox and I, making pictures of tomorrow's sun, just to prove that there is one. The future sets our love.
Sometimes it comes to the bucolic and serene, beneath a sky of maple blue on grass of green screen green. I'll sing around my trumpet. I can't wait to be 16.
Fox and I, decades later at my DJ night, our conversation takes flight. Kraftwerk and clavichords. Fox and I, backstage at Cadogan Hall, not like rock stars at all. Why would we want to be? Strange into a machine.
Hudson's Magnetic Fields on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Acre, Hudson, Catskill. Solar-powered community radio brought to you by many voices from throughout the Hudson Valley.
I wrapped my love in leaves of green as the sun on the hills it did shine. She spoke of things like the distant springs which flow till they all do combine. Then we did flow and combine as we lay. And our love, it will surely last till the leaves have blown all away. As the sun, it warmed our bones, my love, I wrapped in leaves of red. Like the starling's wings as they fall through the clouds overhead. Then we did fall through clouds white and gray. Surely last till the leaves have blown all away.
From 2023, that's Leaves from Copaic's PG6 on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
The Friends of a Clean Hudson Coalition have conducted an independent analysis of the results of 6 years of dredging the Hudson River to clean up the significant amount of PCBs that General Electric dumped into the river over 3 decades. Riverkeeper is one of the organizations leading this coalition, and I'm now joined by their staff attorney, Drew Gammels. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you very much for having me.
Could you summarize the report and the findings around the PCB cleanup of the Hudson River?
Sure. So we used our independent experts, and I say we, this is Friends of a Clean Hudson, led by Riverkeeper, Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, and Scenic Hudson. And so we have used independent experts who are very familiar with the Hudson River Superfund site to evaluate publicly available data to determine what the PCB concentrations are in fish and sediment and what that tells us about the progress towards the remediation goals. And the conclusion is that we are not making the progress needed to achieve the goals set forth in the Record of Decision, which was adopted in 2002 and selected dredging as the remedy in the Upper Hudson River to remediate or address PCB contaminated sediments. And so, you know, what that tells us is that EPA really needs to look at this data, apply the science to make a determination in this third five-year review that's going to be released to say that it's not protective, the remedy is not protective of human health and the environment.
So who is responsible for removing the PCB contamination? And did GE ever actually agree to remove all the PCBs from the river?
Yeah, so General Electric is responsible for removing the PCBs from the Hudson River. And the 2002 Record of Decision was an agreement between EPA and GE where they agreed to do the required dredging that was set forth in the Record of Decision. And the dredging at the time was to dredge the upper, I keep saying Upper Hudson River. That's the 40-mile stretch of the Hudson River between Hudson Falls, New York, and the federal dam at Troy. And so GE did that dredging from 2011 to 2015 was the last year of dredging. And the Record of Decision established an amount of PCBs that were to be removed from the Hudson River. And GE actually removed more than was estimated in that Record of Decision and set forth in the Remedial Action Plan. But what we're emphasizing is that so much more PCBs were left behind, and it's not what was removed that matters. It's nothing to brag about. It's what remains behind that is the most concerning thing.
So if GE fulfilled that original agreement, who is at fault right now?
It's still GE. While they did the dredging that was required, the goal of, you know, the remediation is to achieve specific PCB target goals. And the ROD set forth target goals for both fish concentrations and sediment concentrations. And that's what matters. So GE has not fulfilled its obligations because we have not achieved the remediation goals.
And what are the flaws with the general Superfund program to remove these PCBs from the Hudson River?
I think the length of time that it takes to achieve these remediation goals, that's a huge problem. And there are kind of a lot of barriers to get to that point. First and foremost, we need a not protective determination before you can even reassess and reevaluate the remedy and determine, you know, what else could be done to improve the cleanup and to really get these PCBs out of the Hudson River. Also, we're relying on a Record of Decision that was adopted in 2002 based on very outdated data at this point. And so now here we are in 2025, we're still facing PCBs as a major problem in the Hudson River. We need to apply the science that we have available to us today. And I think that's a big problem with the Superfund process, is that there is no obligation necessarily to take, you know, what you have in that moment. We're relying on this agreement from 2002. We're looking at information that was collected from 1991. And so that's an issue.
So outdated information, but also our technology and understanding of the issue has greatly increased since 2002.
Absolutely. And there's been studies worldwide that talk about PCBs and the dangers of PCBs. I mean, we're still relying on EPA's determination that PCBs are a probable carcinogen. when there's data available that says they are carcinogenic.
So you mentioned the not protective determination, and in a recent press conference, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand held a press conference to urge the Environmental Protection Agency to render this not protective determination in the upcoming review of the cleanup effectiveness. What does this mean, and what is the outcome that would come from determining this?
Sure. So getting a not protective determination is simply step one. In order for EPA to require GE to do any additional cleanup or to have any additional studies, first step is to get a not protective determination. And that opens the door to reassess and reevaluate the remedy and what more could be done. And maybe it's more dredging, or maybe it's capping, or maybe it's additional sampling to collect more data. The not protective determination is step one. Without that, there is nothing that would start the process of looking at this remediation. And we will continue status quo for the next 5 years until the fourth five-year review.
So in addition to the Hudson River, the Champlain Canal is also loaded with PCBs from GE. It's required in the state constitution to be dredged to a depth of 12 feet. And in some areas, it's currently only 4 feet deep. GE has repeatedly resisted calls to clean up this canal. Are environmental groups also pushing to clean up this waterway as well?
I'm sure there are lots of environmental groups pushing to clean up that waterway. That is not particularly a project that Riverkeeper is spearheading or involved in. But PCBs are a problem across the country, and groups step up to demand cleanup. We should be able to have waters that are fishable and safe across the country.
So at this point, I mean, we talked about the non-protective determination, but what do we do at this point? What needs to be done from the role of lawmakers and government, and what can also listeners and residents around the Hudson River do at this point?
You can reach out to EPA and continue to demand a not protective determination. When the third five-year review is released, it'll be released as a draft. We expect it to come out in the next couple months, and there will be a public comment period. So while you're free to put pressure on EPA now to have the draft include a not protective determination, there will be an opportunity once the draft comes out to submit your comments formally as part of that comment period to continue to push for a not protective determination. That is the biggest thing that everyone can do, because like I said, that is step one.
Drew Gammels, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, staff attorney at Riverkeeper. What have I forgotten to ask you about this issue?
I just want to add that, you know, this is an environmental justice issue. EPA is relying on fish consumption advisories to minimize the risk of PCBs. I mean, consuming fish is the number one way PCBs impact humans. And, you know, that's a huge problem. That is not an equitable or just way to handle this situation. We really need to focus on risk reduction rather than risk avoidance, which is what fish consumption advisories are. And so this issue really needs to be addressed. It's been a problem for decades. It will continue to be a problem for future generations if we don't step up now.
Thank you so much for all of this information.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure to share this.
The Radix Ecological Sustainability Center just received a grant to continue its Renewable Mediation for River Regeneration project from the New York State Environmental Protection Fund, New York State DEC Hudson River Estuary Program. To talk about this and what else is happening at the Radix, I'm now joined by Scott Kellogg and Karina Marino. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So congratulations on the grant, and I'm looking forward to seeing more floating islands in the Hudson River. So for our listeners who are new to this project, could you give a brief overview?
Sure. So this is the second round of funding that we received from New York State's DC's Hudson River Estuary Program. And what it's enabled us to do is a number of things, is to really connect our Eco Justice Associate Youth Program to work in the Hudson River along Albany's shoreline. And that's consisted of a number of different parts. We have built a solar-powered pontoon boat that enables us to get out onto the river, particularly with folks who may not be comfortable being in a canoe or a kayak, and improve their access to the river. We've also been in the process of building what we call artificial floating wetlands, which are, well, the name kind of sums it up. They are artificial floating wetlands. They are floating devices that have native water plants attached to them whose roots grow down into the water column. And we anchor them near sewer overflow pipes, with the idea being that when sewage enters the water, the microorganisms living on the roots of the plant will eat the sewage while the plants themselves uptake nutrients out of the water. At the same time, they're creating habitat for a number of different creatures like birds and eels and turtles who otherwise don't have a lot of niches, a lot of places to live along the giant concrete wall that is most of Albany's shoreline. And the new component that we're really excited to add as well that's going to be funded by this current round of funding is purchasing a number of folding kayaks that we're going to use with our Eco Justice Associate Youth Program, where youth will be able to carry these lightweight folding kayaks down to Island Creek Park, which is the only point of public access to the Hudson River in Albany South End, and be able to have a close relationship with the river that way, to actually go out into little kayaking trips and to be visiting the floating wetlands and help maintain them while the solar pontoon boat is watching nearby, with all of this really being intended to create more of a sense of connection and reciprocity and care between particularly youth and the river, which access to is extremely limited in Albany because of the presence of Interstate 787 and the train tracks that have all but cut everybody off from the river.
So with that park being one of the only access points and it being right next to one of those sewage overflow areas, have there been more access points for the residents of Albany? Will there be more access? What is the kind of the history of people having access to the river been like?
Well, I mean, deep history, right? The Mohican people, who are the indigenous people of this land, lived here. Their name means people of the river that flows both directions, had a very close relationship with the estuary, right? For the sustenance that it provided, estuaries among the most biologically productive ecosystems on the planet. And that was a relationship that existed for thousands of years prior to the beginning of settler colonialism. And, you know, during that period, during the ramp of industrialization in the 19th century, the river was pretty much treated as an open sewer. And you had it all sorts of industrial waste products being dumped into it. This really culminating in the mid-20th century with a General Electric plant in Fort Edward, Hudson Falls, disposing tons and tons of PCBs into the river, and we're still dealing with that legacy of contamination to this day. So it's at least, you know, in the times of settler colonialism, the idea of the Hudson having recreational or ecological value, at least around Albany, is kind of a relatively new concept, as it previously was treated very poorly. So there is, of course, a recognition now that a city's waterfront is one of its greatest assets. And that building interstates and industrial infrastructure to cut people off from it is undesirable. However, you know, at this point, what's done is done. So the question is, how do we regenerate around the edges? How do we reconnect? So there is a lot of interest in trying to figure out how to create more connectivity to the river, which is tricky to do, right, when you're dealing with highways and train tracks, which aren't owned by the municipality, right? So the city could decide that it wants to improve its citizens' access to it, yet you're dealing with the Department of Transportation that regulates the interstates and CSX train tracks, right, which are owned by private corporations that have a lot of power and a lot of influence. So it's sort of tricky to do. But a big part of our work, though, is understanding that the first step in getting anybody to care about something is to bring them to it, and to bring residents, and particularly youth, down to the river and say to them, yeah, well, there's still more work to be done here, but, you know, it's actually gotten a lot better in the past 30 years. And I think it's very encouraging for people to know that, that it's almost like we can, if we just stop doing bad things to the river, it has a lot of capacity to heal itself, to regenerate itself. But, you know, an interesting question is, are there ways that we could actually intervene using low cost and affordable methods and biological allies that could speed up that process of healing and regeneration, at the same time building more of a sense of connectivity and relationship between people and this waterway?
I have so many more questions, but I want to leave room for the CSA, which is, or for the farm share, the Radix farm share that is also being offered right now. And Karina, could you talk about the program and really the importance of supporting area farms through programs such as these?
So we have a CSA-like farm share, we call it. Traditional CSA stands for Community Supporting Agriculture. What we do is similar, but they have the option to pay at the end of the month instead of a traditional CSA, which people pay at the beginning of the year. It's about a 32-week program, and people get a small or large bag of produce grown here at Radix each week. So we have herbs, fruits and veggies, eggs when our chickens are laying.
So for someone who might not spend time on gardening, how is this a way to kind of connect them to the importance of this regenerative work you're doing?
It's our hope that people who sign up for the farm share are local to Albany, which benefits us because they can actually come here and see the farm. We do have a pickup option. So on Wednesdays from 3 to 7, they can come here and actually pick up the farm share so they can see how we have it set up here, what we're growing, and the other projects we have going on here. So that's a nice way to connect to the community too.
And what can someone expect by being a part of it?
In the spring, it's we have a lot of greens, radishes, pea shoots, microgreens, lettuce, spinach, you know, kind of those cold hardy crops. Getting more into June, May and June, we have, you know, beets, Swiss chard, kale, kind of getting into more of the summer stuff. We start to get tomatoes in July, cabbages. Last year, we had a lot of fennel, a lot of scallions, onions. And then we kind of go into the fall with, you know, more greens and some hardier stuff like squashes, garlic, and carrots, crops like that, that kind of can last a little bit longer.
So for listeners who are interested in participating in the farm share or supporting Radix in other ways, what's the best way to get more information?
Our website is updated for the farm share page, and also our Instagram is a great resource, and our Facebook to connect, and, you know, by email, which is Corinna@radixcenter.org or produce@radixcenter.org is a great way to get in touch.
Well, thank you so much, Scott and Karina, for joining me on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Would you like to leave our listeners with anything?
If anybody's interested in coming out and checking out the Radix Center, we're going to be having South End Earth Day on April 20th, which is looking to be a whole neighborhood event. So that's a great opportunity to come down and help clean up some gardens and meet some folks and do some networking. So, yeah, we hope to see you then.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My very dear, dear deceased friend, Chris Newman, off his Unmasters American Songs of Hope and Distress. Here's Dirty Overalls. The Dirty Overalls, the Woody Guthrie cover.
Are falling, the war clouds they rambled as they roared. I was a soldier in the fight, and I fought until we won. My uniform, my dirty overalls. This piece of land that I stand on is
war have roared, and bombs and shells have fallen. The war clouds, they ramble as they roar. I was a soldier in that fight, and we fought until we won. My uniform's my dirty overalls. This piece of land that I stand on is my battlefield at home. My plow and my hoe is my gun. Clothes don't make no difference at all. We are workers, fighters all. We're marching in our dirty overalls.
Those who make it.
Traveled, and that's been what I wanted at this point, and that's been fulfilling for me.
I kind of want to just explore for a while.
There were sounds around the morning sun that pleased you. I was worried that they might have gone. And we lingered at the table after eating, wondering how long does love go on. There was nothing but a traveler's bag we needed in a howling wind. They were all around to see me when I killed it, wondering how long this life could go on. How long have I been wrong? They were hiding down inside the room we made you. Wait until the afternoon to love. When you saw her face, you screamed into the evening, shouting, how could I deserve? We left you all alone, we knew you'd leave us. So we stayed with you all through the night. There was something in the feeling when I held you, wishing everything would be just fine. When I told you, you laughed at me.